Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Dr. Zed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller is an oncologist specializing in pain and palliative care. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Dr. Chu is joined by Dr. Lynn Wilson. Dr. Wilson is Professor, Vice Chairman, and Clinic Director of the Department of Therapeutic Radiology at Yale School of Medicine, and is here to discuss the use of radiation therapy for cancer treatment.
So why don't we just go ahead and start off by discussing what is radiation therapy?
Well, radiation therapy is the medical usage of radiation to treat cancer patients for the most part. There are some non-malignant or non-cancerous indications for the use of radiation treatment, but probably greater than 95% of the patients we treat have cancer of some sort. And there are really three different ways or situations in which we provide radiation to such patients, and that can be for as part of a definitive cure for those patients. It can be given adjuvantly, meaning after the primary treatment for a patient with breast cancer, for example, who may have surgery as their primary treatment. We often use radiation after the surgical procedure. And in the palliative setting where we're trying to help a patient get relief from symptoms, whether it be bleeding or pain.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll hold on that for a moment and maybe let's start off with the basics. So I guess when I think of radiation therapy, I think of, you know, some machine focusing X-rays at a particular spot. Is that correct, or are there other ways of giving radiation therapy?
Well, there's several ways, and thinking of the machine focusing on a particular spot is really the primary modality, and that machine's called a linear accelerator, which has been around for many years. Different generations in technology have improved our ability to focus, but these machines actually generate electrons, which are accelerated several feet down a pathway at very, very high speeds, and they impact a tungsten target usually, and that produces a photon, which is an X-ray, which is aimed very precisely at the part of the body that we're interested in treating. And so a photon is really just a group of very energetic particles that can interact with cellular DNA to damage cancer cells. And when the beam comes out of this linear accelerator device, it's highly focused, extremely precise. There are other ways of delivering radiation therapy, though that's not the only one. Brachytherapy is a term that we use that refers to the implantation of radioactive seeds, for example. Hmm. And that can be done to treat prostate cancer, cervical cancer, and a variety of other tumors. And then there are some relatively new systemically given agents that have monoclonal antibodies, which are targeted at certain types of cells, and those have radioactive molecules attached to them so that the radiation can be delivered very, very specifically.
Are there any instances in which you might think of combining the X-ray form of radiation therapy and the brachytherapy approach?
Yeah, there are a variety. That's sometimes done in prostate cancer. Here at Yale, we have an extensive experience in brachytherapy in a variety of different organ systems, particularly for GYN cancers and for head and neck cancers. And quite often, we actually combine brachytherapy, the implantation of radioactive seeds into a tumor in the head and neck, in addition to the patient receiving external beam radiation as part of their treatment package. And chemotherapy is often an important part of that combination as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about this term called gamma knife? How does that involve radiation therapy?
So gamma knife is a particular type of way to deliver radiation to a very, very pinpoint precision-based target. It's typically used for treatment of brain tumors, and it's an array of cobalt sources that are radioactive that actually produce X-rays, and those are focused at a particular point in the brain with many, many of these sources converging on one very small pinpointed area. So the advantage of something like Gamma Knife is that we can deliver very, very precise and high doses of radiation to small places in the brain and minimizing the amount of radiation to the other parts of the brain, which is very important, obviously.
So is that the kind of preferred approach for treating patients with brain cancer?
Well, it depends. It depends on the type of cancer and the size of the cancer itself. For some patients who have very, very small primary brain tumors, it may be a reasonable option. It's certainly commonly used for patients who have spread of cancer to the brain, where it has come from the lung, for example, or a breast cancer and deposited itself into the brain. Mm-hmm. It can be used very effectively to eradicate such lesions.
Okay. Now, when we started off the show, you mentioned that radiation therapy can be used in three different settings. Maybe we could kind of get into that a little bit more.
Sure. The primary setting that we use radiation for, and most of the cases that are treated, are for definitive treatment. And what I mean by that is we'll take something like prostate cancer, for example. Surgery is obviously one option, but radiotherapy is another. And it's a bit of a complicated discussion to decide who, for example, would have the most benefit from surgery versus radiation. But both of those modalities would be used to completely eradicate a patient's cancer. In our program here at Yale, we use intensity modulated radiation therapy, IMRT, to treat all of our prostate cancer patients. And in lung cancer, for example, we would use radiation, perhaps in combination with chemotherapy, for definitive treatment with the intention of completely eradicating the cancer. And there are other examples, but those are two common ones. When we use radiation adjuvantly, that means that the primary treatment for the patient has been delivered with another modality. And so a breast cancer patient, for example, their primary treatment might be surgery, and they might have a lumpectomy. And we would provide radiation to that patient afterwards to ensure that they have the best local control of their cancer possible. The palliative setting would be for a patient, for example, who might have had a cancer spread to a bone, and that mm-hmm. might be painful. And we could provide a relatively short course of treatment with radiation to alleviate their symptoms of pain. So those are the three primary settings. And it's a very important modality in all three of those mm-hmm. cases.
And just to, I guess, further expand on the scenario you just mentioned in terms of using radiation therapy for bone pain. I think we find that to be a very effective way at relieving pain, in some cases almost instantly, from the moment you actually shine that beam on that particular area of bone involvement.
Yeah, it's extremely effective. And what's nice about the palliative treatment is often patients have courses of radiation that last 6 or 7 weeks, for example. But in the palliative setting, there's several schedules that we can utilize, sometimes actually giving treatment in only one session to mm-hmm. provide symptomatic relief. We decide on how many sessions are necessary based on the location of the body and how much soft tissue may be intervening. And we take all that into account. But usually within a week or two, patients can have dramatic relief from their discomfort. And as you suggest, sometimes it can be appreciated after just one or two treatments, depending on the cancer cell type.
Now, when you make treatment decisions, I think one of the real advances that we've seen over the years is that really you're working in close concert with your other oncology colleagues. Maybe you can let our listeners know a little bit more about how that process.
So I'm the primary radiation oncologist at Yale who works with a thoracic oncology program. So the patients that I typically see have malignancies of the chest, most commonly lung cancer. And there are really three main advantages to what we call this multidisciplinary approach here at Yale. The primary one is that it's very, very convenient for patients because we can have a variety of different specialists, say a surgeon, a medical oncologist, radiation oncologist, all seeing the patient together, not necessarily all in the room at the same time, but perhaps sequentially over an hour or two. And so it's really one-stop shopping for the patient, which is great, instead of spreading those appointments over several weeks. So that's one primary advantage of convenience. Another advantage in our program within the Department of Radiation Oncology at Yale, we have a variety of different specialists, and we have a very large group. So by having a large group, it affords us to have the opportunity to have one person specialize in one or two diseases, for example, as opposed to a very small group where each physician would have to do a little bit of everything. So with that, we have tremendous expertise for each one of our physicians. So when I have my clinical activity in the thoracic oncology group, most of the patients that I take care of have thoracic malignancies. So I'm able to specialize in that clinically, my research efforts, and so on. The third advantage for the patient in this multidisciplinary clinical setting is that since all of the physicians are together in that clinic, patients can get information with regard to recommendations very, very rapidly, instead of having to wait to see each of the doctors over several weeks and hoping that they're contacting each other in writing or by telephone. We're actually discussing the cases that day while the patient's there, so that by the time the patient leaves at the end of this visit with a variety of specialists, they have the recommendations that they need from all of the specialists who were involved. And so there's convenience, expertise, and the patient is ready to embark on a treatment plan very, very efficiently and rapidly.
And I think this is really one of the hallmarks and advantages of so-called designated comprehensive cancer centers, where you have specialists from different fields, as you've outlined, work together to come up with a, you know, kind of a well-integrated, coordinated treatment plan for the patient.
That's right.
So, it's something that at the cancer center we really focus, you know, great attention on. I guess maybe just tell us a little bit about, on average, how long would people get treated with radiation therapy?
It depends quite a bit on the clinical scenario, meaning the type of cancer that the patient has, and whether we're treating someone with a curative approach or adjuvantly or palliatively. We talked a little bit about palliative treatment, and that can be given relatively quickly, anywhere from, say, 1 to 10 treatment visits. Treating someone for prostate cancer, definitively, for example, may take as many as 7 to 8 weeks, and that's daily treatment, typically 5 days a week. The treatment itself only takes 5 minutes or so, and one is in our department only for about 20 minutes. So once the visits and the treatment program is underway, it's highly efficient, and we try to make it as convenient as possible for patients so that they can go about doing their other activities. But generally, I would say the average course of definitive radiation treatment is going to run somewhere between 5 and 7 weeks mm-hmm. on average daily.
And I think one of the real advantages of radiation therapy, as you say, is it's actually a very short period of time that the patient needs to be in the clinic.
Extremely short period of time. Some of the modern and specialized treatments, such as gamma knife, for example, or stereotactic radiosurgery, which we can talk about a bit later, mm-hmm. do take a little bit longer because there are many, many beams being utilized to give highly focused radiation on one particular spot. And sometimes those treatments tend to only be a single treatment session, or maybe several. So although the day may be longer, a patient who is getting stereotactic radiosurgery, for example, may only have 3 treatment visits total. So it may seem like a very long time, several hours, but within a week or so, over those 3 visits given every other day, treatment's complete.
Now, before you begin the radiation treatments, there is very careful planning that goes into deciding how to give and what doses and all of that.
Absolutely. And that's probably, obviously, delivering the treatment is critically important, but the planning and the design of the treatment is essential to have that done under the most modern standards with great quality assurance. We have an entire section within our department called dosimetry and have quite a few individuals whose full-time position is to assist the physician staff with design of safe and clinically appropriate treatment field design. 15, 20 years ago, we would typically treat a patient maybe with 2 beams, one from the front and one from the back, to very large fields because we didn't have the diagnostic capabilities with high-quality CAT scanning and MRI scanning as we do now, and we certainly didn't have PET scans back then. We integrate all of this information into the treatment planning for our patients so that we can make it as accurate and as appropriate as possible. But those planning sessions take quite a long time, and typically a patient would come to our department as a new patient and have what we call a consultation, where they would meet with the physician, and we would take their history, of course, would have reviewed the records prior to the visit, perform a physical examination, and spend a fair amount of time with the patient to discuss the options and the treatment plan. Once we embark on an actual plan, the patient would come back for what we call a radiation simulation. And in our department, that typically involves getting a CAT scan, and we use the information from that CAT scan to start designing with our dosimetry team the appropriate treatment fields. Angles of the beams, how many beams to use, are we going to use IMRT? And it's a complicated process that takes many, many hours of work. We also have a large cadre of PhD-level physicists who are part of our department, who are another section within our department, who are also involved in helping us do this treatment planning. But when that planning's complete and the physician has signed off on the best plan and we're ready to go, then the patient's contacted and we make arrangements for them to come in and start the therapy.
Great. So there's kind of a very well-coordinated team effort kind of behind the initial multidisciplinary team approach.
That's right. And sometimes after that consultation, it may take, in something that's very straightforward, we could literally start the patient the next day. In some cases that are more complicated, say, for example, a very technically complicated IMRT plan for the head and neck, that may take a week or so before we're ready to actually start that patient's treatment. And that can be very disconcerting for patients, of course, because everybody's anxious to get the treatment program underway. But I can't stress how essential it is to really take the time and integrate all of these expert team members into devising a plan. Another thing that we haven't talked about yet is most of our treatments these days are highly coordinated with physicians from your staff in medical oncology, and we spend a lot of time ensuring that the coordination of radiation and chemotherapy on the drugs, the doses of radiation that we use, these treatments are highly coordinated and not ad hoc in any way. And it's important to have radiation given after chemotherapy in some settings, for example, on any given day. So there are quite a few behind-the-scenes activities that go on after that consultation.
Well, maybe we can pick that topic up after the break. At this point, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to canceranswers@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this time, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. And please stay tuned to learn more information about radiation therapy with our special guest expert, Dr. Lynn Wilson.
Over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer this year, and more than 85% of these diagnoses are related to smoking. The important thing to understand is that quitting, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care, and new treatment options are giving lung cancer survivors new hope. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. And patients enrolled in these trials are given access to medicines not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here in the studio this evening with Dr. Lynn Wilson talking about the use of radiation therapy for cancer treatment. Lynn, before the break, you mentioned that radiation therapy in some cases is combined with chemotherapy, which obviously is in the realm of the medical oncologist. And maybe you could tell our listeners, you know, what diseases you typically think about combining radiation with chemotherapy, and what might be some of the potential symptom side effects that folks need to look out for?
So there are a variety of diseases where we do institute the combination of chemotherapy and radiation. Just to give several examples, although it won't be inclusive of everything, head and neck cancer, for example, very locally advanced head and neck cancer, which means a larger tumor that may have spread to the lymph nodes. We often integrate chemotherapy with radiation into that treatment package. The reason we do that is because although combining the two treatments sometimes can be a little bit more toxic for patients, we know that in doing that, the outcomes, the clinical outcomes of local control, and in many cases, the overall survival of the patient can be significantly enhanced. Lung cancer is another possible combination of said therapies, not for early stage lung cancer, but in a stage 3 lung cancer, for example, where a patient has a tumor and lymph nodes in the middle of the chest that we can see are involved by the cancer. In that situation, and this is all based on data, Ed, not just based on what we think is best, but it's based on many, many years of clinical trials that have been done and completed. And our approach is very, very evidence-based here at Yale. Mm-hmm. But lung cancer is another excellent example where the best outcomes have been seen when we do a combination of radiation and chemotherapy. And then, of course, this is more your area, but then there's a whole nother discussion that can be opened up about which are the best drugs, what combination of drugs with the radiation, what sort of schedule should we use? And there's various options there. And that's another advantage of the multidisciplinary team, getting back to that. We have these various schedules and combinations, and when I work with my colleague Scott Gettinger, who's an expert in medical oncology on the thoracic oncology team, not only is Scott an excellent clinical investigator and clinician, but he's an expert at devising the treatment regimens for patients that he thinks the patients will derive the best clinical outcomes from. But also, it's obviously important for patients to have a regimen that they can tolerate well.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Scott and your group are trying to develop a clinical study that combines some of these newer targeted therapies with radiation therapy.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, we're always trying to remain on the cutting edge. And as I mentioned before, the basis for most of the work that we do in the clinic today is directly come out of clinical trial work that's been done. Some clinical trial work here at Yale, but really around the world. And so it really serves as the basis for what the best treatment for cancer is going to be in tomorrow's clinic.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the, maybe we'll start off with the short-term side effects of radiation therapy, either alone or in combination with chemotherapy?
So they can be various. It depends on the part of the body that we're treating. It depends on the radiation schedule, what size of radiation dose we're giving on a daily basis. But in speaking in general terms, patients can get some fatigue from radiation treatment. Sometimes there can be some skin irritation. Generally, when we do a combination therapy of radiation and chemotherapy, sometimes these side effects that I'll discuss can be a bit worse than chemotherapy or radiation alone. Again, the whole concept behind that, though, is to try to be aggressive so that we can have the best chance at curing the cancer or eradicating the problem. So fatigue, skin changes, decrease in blood counts, depending on how much bone marrow we have to cover with the radiation field. Sometimes there can be some irritation of the swallowing tube or the esophagus if we're treating a tumor in the chest. Mm-hmm. And that can come in the form of some discomfort on swallowing or a patient who's getting head and neck cancer treatment, a sore throat. What we're aware of, though, is that we know what to expect because we have a lot of experience. And when we know what to expect, we're in a better position to be prepared to counteract these side effects. And we counsel the patients actually on the first day at the time of consultation regarding what to expect and what might happen. And we're very comprehensive about that because I would much rather have a patient be very, very prepared about all of the potential possibilities as opposed to not having a thorough discussion and then having something come up for the patient that they've never heard of or would be unexpected and, of course, would cause a lot of anxiety.
And I guess probably one thing to emphasize to the listeners out there is that they should feel free to ask any questions of their physicians.
Absolutely. That's what we're there for. In addition, we have an on-call service for our patients who are under treatment, and it's actually utilized by patients who are no longer in the treatment program, mm-hmm. and we provide that 24-hour and weekend service to our patients. It's, of course, especially important for the patients who are on the active treatment program, though, who may be doing fine during the day but develop a problem in the middle of the night.
Now, Lynn, is there anything that you can do for the fatigue issue?
Well, that's a tough one. We do a lot of counseling right up front regarding nutrition, exercise, perhaps curtailing certain activities that we know would be strenuous for the patient during the treatment course. So we try to predict what we can do. But probably the best thing we can do, Ed, is tailor the treatment as accurately and specifically as possible to try to avoid as much normal tissue as possible. But even through the use of very, very small radiation fields, there's typically always some degree of fatigue, although in most cases, usually it's pretty minor.
Hmm. And I take it the skin rash or skin toxicity, is that like a sunburn or?
Well, it kind of feels and looks like a sunburn. And it can be red and itchy and irritating, sometimes uncomfortable for the patient. But again, we're pretty good at predicting when we think this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there's not too much you can really do prophylactically to prevent it. But there are a lot of things that we can do once it happens in terms of certain emollient creams, soaks that are formerly called open wet dressings, different schedules that we recommend to patients. And it's different depending on the part of the body or the size of the radiation field. But getting getting back to the importance of the treatment planning, we take a lot of care in designing these radiation treatment beams. When we use our computers in that simulation CAT scan, we can actually see the dose distribution, obviously in the area of the tumor, but we're looking at all the normal tissues as well. And actually evaluating the dose of radiation to the skin is an important part of that quality assurance package so that we can try to minimize that sunburn effect, because obviously that's very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And are there any long-term consequences of radiation therapy?
Well, unfortunately, there are. Some of the more common ones are sometimes there can be some scar tissue formation, and long-term side effects of radiation are almost directly proportional to the size of radiation we give each day. So this is the reason for these protracted fractionation or treatment courses that take many, many weeks. A common question I get from a patient is, why do I have to come for 7 weeks for the treatment? Why can't we do this in a few days? And I could certainly give a dose of radiation, say, in 5 days instead of 7 weeks that might be very, very effective at eradicating the cancer. The problem with that will be is that there might be tremendous long-term complications from that treatment in terms of skin changes, scar tissue. If we were treating the esophagus, for example, scarring of the esophagus, which might cause long-term swallowing problems. Mm-hmm. Treating a breast cancer patient, there might be long-term scar tissue in the breast, and the cosmetic outcome may be very inferior compared to fractionating the treatment over a longer period of time. And the same holds true for prostate, for example, because with prostate treatment, that's one of our longer treatment courses. But if we did the treatment very quickly, there might be significant bowel, rectum, and bladder toxicity long-term, which could lead to frequent urination, incontinence, and those sorts of problems.
So we only have a short time left, actually, I think 2 minutes. So Lynn, what type of clinical trials are you and your group here at Yale doing for patients?
So we have a variety of clinical trials in various organ systems. We have two clinical trials for breast cancer patients. One is we are participating in a national trial evaluating standard whole breast radiation versus only treating part of the breast with radiation, and that trial's ongoing, and our department participates in that trial. And in fact, Dr. Joanne Wiedes is the principal investigator here at Yale, who is the Yale representative nationally running that trial, and we are actually one of the top accruers nationally to that trial. So we're extremely vested in trying to answer the question of, is there an advantage to partial breast radiation? Mammocyte is a term that patients have probably heard of, or maybe our listeners have heard of, and we won't get into the details, but that's one option for partial breast treatment. There's also a phase 2 mammocyte trial, which Dr. Wiedes designed, which is also ongoing and open at Yale.
Okay. Any other trials that you might want
there
to
There are
mention?
Several other ones. We have a head and neck trial in combination with chemotherapy from your colleagues for patients with very advanced head and neck cancers. We participate in an RTOG trial, which is the Radiation Therapy Oncology Group for patients with stage 3 lung cancer, investigating higher doses of radiation with chemotherapy followed by surgery. We have a vested interest in that. And there's also a cervix trial for patients with cervix cancer in combination with chemotherapy. So we have a variety of trials in a variety of different organ systems, specifically lung cancer, breast cancer, head and neck cancer, and cervical cancer.
Great. Well, Lynn, it's been great having you on the show. The time has kind of flown by, and we look forward to having you on a future show to hear more about what's going on in the Radiation Oncology Group here at the Yale Cancer Center.
Thank you very much.
Until next week, this is Dr. Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, we'll meet Dr. Peter Schwartz, a leading expert on cervical cancer.